Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And what's up, y'all? Another episode of Knights at the Round Table. It's your boy Manuel, Angela Johnson, Elise Murphy.
Hey, we didn't get Bobies this time.
Bobies.
Ah.
Ooh, happy, happy, joy, joy. Tonight, we are breaking vino, yep. Queen.
Breaking vino. 19 crimes again. We did 19 crimes a couple episodes ago. This one is The Banished. Mm-hmm. Dark Red, 2017. Now, this is a cool one because it's the one that has the app where you can download it and you put it over their face, and then this guy tells you a story of like why he was arrested, what was his crime, 19 crimes.
Yeah, super dope. We're kind of fans of the 19 crimes movement.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's like a great price point. Like, we're just at Trader Joe's yesterday. It's like $11.
Yeah.
They have that at Trader Joe's?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know what that says about us, that we're all about the 19 crimes.
It's really good, though. It's a good tasting wine. I know. It's from Southeastern Australia.
Aussie, Aussie, Oi.
Welcome.
Aussie, Oi. Festival.
No, babe, that's not how
Aussie,
it goes.
Aussie, let us do it. Oi, oi, oi.
That's how you do it.
That's
so where do they do that at?
Literally at anytime we have a chance to. If you're in a crowd and you do that in Australia, you will get a response.
I didn't do that in any of my shows.
Honestly, girl, next time I'll come with you. I'm coming with you next time.
I didn't do that in any of my shows.
Yeah, I'm coming next time too.
Oh,
no.
Come
whatever.
On, Manuel.
I like the remix. Hey,
she
so
is.
Today we're going part 3 of our 3-part series, Love, How to Find It, How to Keep It, What Do You Do When You Lose It. Today we talking about what you do when you lose love. Besides get pissed and cuss people out, throw stuff, we're going to try to talk about some healthy ways to get through a bad breakup, a bad divorce, a bad friendship breakup.
Yeah,
I mean,
love.
Just period. Yeah, love. Just exiting love and how hard it is to do that. And each person here, we have our own stories, different ages, different things that we've gone through. Yeah. Different variations of it all, but I can start it off because mine was pretty not even that important. I was in college and it was so whack. I dated the girl for like 2 days,
Wait, what?
2 days. 2 days.
Oh, you with that guy?
Yeah, yeah. No. Okay. She was super fly chick from Canada, and every guy wanted to get with her. You know, and I happened to land her after saying no for like a week straight. I don't want to mess with you. I ain't trying to whatever. And then finally she talked me into like hanging out, and we was together for 2 magical days. Then she like pieced on me.
She ghosted you?
She just bounced.
For real, she stopped talking to you?
Just bounced. We dated for 2 days, but one of those days was a Sunday and we went to church together and everything.
Spiritual.
So I was like, man, this could be us. And she bounced. And when I say she, like, it ruined me, like, I was crying for like 6 months.
Dang.
But here's why. This is the first time I've ever been rejected. And it was when I was 25 years old in college. I never faced rejection before that. And so she just kind of like tapped into something that I didn't even know existed in me. Like, I reverted to like fifth grade Manny when I should have been rejected. Like, you know, people get rejected in their life, like in a normal moment, and you deal with it as you're younger and you grow up and you get used to it. I never had rejection like in anything And I used to think, oh, that's so cool. You know, like, I get what I want. It's not cool because you're 25 years old and you get rejected for the first time. And I go back to little sixth grade Manny.
Yeah.
To the point where, yo, this chick thought my pork chop sideburns were cool back when, whatever, she complimented me. I would not shave my sideburns off because I thought that she was going to see me with the sideburns and come back to me.
Jeez.
She complimented my earrings. Deep. And I was like, oh, I'm going to keep these earrings on forever because she'll see me one day and she'll think, the pork chop earrings.
You did go back to back. Sixth grader.
Literally. Wow. I would be typing. Well, I would be typing my report or whatever. And I would literally just fall over and start bawling, crying on the... It was bad. It was so bad. But that was like the hardest... That was the hardest thing I ever dealt with. But the thing
ever?
That... Yeah, up until that point.
Oh, okay.
Life was a breeze.
Like, I was like, till now?
No, it was very... It was a breezy. It was breezy. But it taught me something. It taught me
forgiveness. What did it teach you,
Manuel? Forgiveness. Like, I learned... Hmm. I had one of my first visions... Or my second vision in my life. And I saw like a dark, thorny road that was very thin and it didn't look attractive. And then I saw a very wide road and all my friends were on it. And the wide road was literally unforgiveness. Because all my homies told me, yo, she's this, she's that. And then when it happened, they were just cursing around. She's just I told you. And then a dark road, nobody was on and it was just forgiveness. And I had that vision. I'll never forget it, walking through the quad. And that day I was like, you know what, God? I'm going to choose forgiveness. I'm going to choose to understand this chick. Even though she like totally just did me wrong, I'm going to understand why she did this. Mm. And as I found out more about her, you know, she suffered a family loss before she even came that semester. Mm. She lost one of her family members. And so literally like a couple days before she even got to school. And so she was just basically just hiding her pain and dating people.
Yeah.
And I asked myself, I was like, man, if I lost my brother, if I lost my mom, how would I be treating girls? What would I be doing?
Yeah.
And so I just had nothing but grace for her. And I told God, I was like, God, you know what? I'm just going to pray for her that her heart heals and all this stuff. And everybody told me I was stupid. They just wanted me to be angry. And I just refused. I was like, I'm going to forgive her. Because one day I want to be able to look her in her face and say, hey, I just prayed for you. I loved you. That's it. And sure enough, a year later, the next year, she came up to me and she was like, yo, I'm so sorry for what I did. And I was able to look her in her face and say, you know what? Like, it was all good. I just prayed for you. Like, it was all good. And she saw it in my face that I was 100% being honest. And we've been cool. Like, we hugged it out. And I got through it and I was like, wow. And from that day on, like, I've never had a problem with unforgiveness.
But like, had you shaved your sideburns off or had you kept them?
No, they were gone at that
there
point.
It is. Okay, like, cool. I'm that's when you know
that
it's healed.
That was when you were praying?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
when you I'm know
like,
it's healed.
The Lord was like, cut thy sideburns.
Shaven face. Yeah. It's healed.
I moved on and now it's good. It's good. Mm. Like no regrets. But yeah, that was my breakup.
Love can be intense and it can be quick.
Oh yeah.
2 days.
Yeah. My story is kind of similar.
Oh, you guys.
To yours in a sense. It was longer than 2 days. But
ouch.
This guy, I didn't love him. But when he rejected me.
Yeah.
And listen, I had dated guys before and they don't call you back or whatever, whatever. This was different. It was the way it happened, and it was like overnight, just done. It stirred up something inside of me that I hadn't experienced, and it was that I felt disposable.
Jeez.
And I had never felt disposable to someone before. And that is what made me go into depression for a few months after that. Mm. And I remember after we stopped dating, my family, like my mom and my sister, they saw how depressed I was. And so they thought that I must have like been like sleeping with him and I got this like connection to him. And that's why whatever. I was like, no, I didn't even
sleep with him. I didn't. We dated for like a month, but it was how disposable I was to a person. That is what hurt me the most. It took me a while to get to that point to realize, oh, this is why I'm so sad, is because I feel disposable. It was just like, I was just broken and crying and like, what was it? And it was that feeling. It was not even about him. Just like your feeling was not about that girl. It could have been place any girl in that position. Yeah. It was this new feeling of rejection. Yeah. And mine was this new feeling of disposable. And you learned forgiveness in yours. What I learned was compassion. And I was able to recognize hurt and heartbreak when I couldn't before because I had never experienced it before. And I remember it was like maybe a week or so after that breakup. I was on the road. I was doing shows. And I was in San Francisco. And I was walking around with my mom and my sister, and I was just kind of depressed and just quiet, you know. And we walk into the store, and this girl's helping me in the store. And just like misery loves company, like hurt and depression, my hurt, my depression, my angst recognized it in her. And she was just quiet. She wasn't mean. She wasn't sad and crying. She was just like quiet. And like I felt something in her. And I remember I said something to her, and I don't remember exactly the words that I said, but I think I asked her if she was okay. And she just started crying. And I remember I just gave this girl a hug and was just like telling her all the encouraging things, like, you're going to be okay. You're going to get through it, and whatever it is, whatever. But I would not have recognized that if I wasn't currently feeling it. So I learned compassion through that. And I had to walk through it. I don't have like a tip of like, how do you walk through it? But you walk it out, and you don't try to cover it. You don't try to cover it with alcohol, with going out, and like, well, replace him with the next, but you work through it and you figure out why you're reacting this way. So I had to figure out that it was actually, I felt disposable, but that came from doing the work and asking God and journaling and questions and praying and like seeking counsel or whatever it is. So I guess that would be my tip, is what do you do when you lose it? Is you do the work on yourself and don't just try to cover your pain, but work through your pain.
How did you, like you said, you felt disposable, which is such a, it almost feels like one of those therapy revelations you have when you're like, oh, there it is. Yeah. Like you uncover it. I guess, what were the layers deep before that? Like, what did it look like? What did he do? What did it practically look like that made you feel disposable? And then what layers did you have to go through? Whether you thought it was rejection at first, whether you thought it was how you looked or how you acted until you got to disposable. Do you know what I mean?
The way it looked, the actual rejection and disposable, was we would talk every single day, like multiple times a day. And I had done a really insecure thing the day before. I did something really insecure and I was like acting out on my insecurity. And he just cut me off. Never called me again. That's never texted me again. Jeez. Nothing. And I knew I had done something insecure, but to not even get like a phone call and I remember I tried to apologize and just no response to my apology or anything. And so that was a lot that I had to work through as well. Like, oh, what did I do? I'm so stupid.
Yeah, it was me.
Like, I knew it was me, but and I knew what I did was stupid, but I felt like it was stupid, but I would still get another chance to be like, my bad, that was dumb.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that opportunity. Yeah. So it was like, oh, what? And I remember like writing out this deep apology and like saying, like, I recognize like that was really insecure and really stupid, and still getting no response. It was just like another strike. Oh God. And
yeah.
And then you were asking what
layers did you go through to like to be like, oh, it was disposable. It wasn't.
You know,
I guess you kind of said that, though. Like, you thought it was your fault. Yeah,
I don't remember exactly, like, my process step by step. I just know that that's the outcome that I got to. And that rang true to me. And it felt like, oh, yeah. Like, that therapy moment. Like, yep, that's it. And,
like, all the other excuses can feel hazy when you come upon that moment. It's like this knowing inside you that that's it. Like, I know that's it. And so the others were kind of like, could it be this? Could it be that? I think for me, that's kind of like when you come upon those revelations, in a sense, it's so clear.
Yeah, it's the epiphany. I'd say for me, it's kind of twofold. I'm going to hit on one just a little bit more, but it was like my first heartbreak, like the first girl I ever loved, you know? And then second, the heartbreak came from my parents' marriage dissolving and splitting. So the first one, to give a little backdrop, I had been like so just like in love from a distance with this girl since my freshman year of high school. And she was a part of this amazing church that was actually out of state. It was in Vegas. And so I was in Vegas a lot just for ministry, for basketball, whatever
ministry.
It is.
Ministry.
Quote, ministry. No, legit ministry. And so we had both liked each other for a long time, but we were sending each other mixed signals. Like, we're young. We don't know what we're doing. I'm talking to her best friend, and I'm like, yo, I really, really like this girl. And she's like, oh, well, she's just not into you. You know, she's into somebody else. And on the other end, she was telling her best friend, I am really into Brandon. I really like him. And she's feeding the message back, oh, Brandon's not into you. He's into someone else.
Oh, wow.
Come to find out, best friend was in love with me.
Oh, wow. Oh,
that's drama.
No.
So best friend gets removed from situation. I move into my senior year of high school, and we finally figure out, oh, my God. We've been the people like we've been into this entire time. Even though we might have been dating other people, it was like in the back of my mind, you were still like the standard, you know? So I fall in love quick. And again, I say love because at that time, that's what it felt like.
To you, yeah.
And you know, like now I feel like I'm swimming in the deep end of the pool. Back then it was a kiddie pool. It's still water. I'm still swimming. It's still love, you know? And so it goes over into my freshman year of college. I get to college and there are some things, some people in my life that are very close to me that said, you know what? You need to end this relationship. It's not good. We've discerned some things about her that just aren't right. She needs a da, 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 da. And I'm feeling so much of this pressure and I'm still not even really confident in the man that I am today. Cause now I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do what I want. You know, whether you like it or not, that's just, I got to be true to me. So back then I'm feeling this pressure and this like, I have to make everyone around me happy, especially these people who are really close to me that I really love. So I end up calling it off and I'm like, look, this is done. Whatever this is, like, we're not going to talk to each other again. This is it. And during the time that we were together, about that year and a half, we made so many promises to each other. Like, hey, we're not going to get married immediately, but this is what it's going to look like. I'm in college. You're going off to ministry school, all these things. So there's like this like heart, like already anticipating what that's going to feel like on the other end of the promise.
Oh, wow.
So I called it off and I remember feeling so heartbroken. Mm-hmm. Like literally I was depressed my freshman year in college when everyone else was like excited to get to college, party, finally freedom, you know, I'm just in my dorm room just crying.
Aww.
And like, I'm like, and because I was crying because I'm like, it doesn't get better than her. Like, to me, this was, like, the closest thing that I could feel to, like, this is what I want in my person.
Yeah.
And this is the top. And it doesn't get better than this. So, like, I just remember during that time meeting, like, really good-looking girls at college. And I'm like, ah, but you don't compare to, you know, you don't compare to her.
Oh, wow.
And I think the thing that I really found about myself was during that time, I really isolated myself from everything. Like, except for class and basketball practice and everything that I had to do. And I think the breakup really exposed me to two things about myself. One was the brokenness that I felt, which introduced me to just how deep I can actually go within myself, which creates the space for me to actually give love.
Yeah.
And then two, I think the other thing that I had to figure out was, how do I find myself again? Because for the last like 5-6 years, I have been finding myself in her.
Yeah.
Because she is what I want to be. And so it's like when you find your identity and you bind that to something really hard, like it brings you like worth and value. And so all of a sudden I felt like, man, I'm nothing without her.
Mm.
Like, she's amazing. And I'm not convinced of my amazing yet.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I just remember during that time, there came a point, probably about the 6 month mark, where I just started immersing myself in all of the things I wanted to explore. And I started finding about all these amazing things that I didn't know about me. And like, I came out on the other end of the heartbreak and I'm like, yo, I'm dope. And like, fully convinced of it. And yeah, again, it was still like, that. Hey, I love you from a distance. I realize that, you know, this probably won't be a thing. But I think the thing that helped me get through the heartbreak was me learning things about myself again that I didn't know. And I think my brokenness was like the actual door that I could go and explore new realms within myself.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Dude, that's deep. Yeah. That's the opportunity when it comes to heartbreak is finding yourself. You can come out of it broken and looking for somebody else to heal it. Or you can go inside. You can, if you have faith, you know, look up to God and also look inside. And you literally come out the other side like, oh, this is who I am. I am awesome. Like, that's, it's something that I feel like I didn't really, I thought I knew, you always think you know heartbreak. I love what you said about like when you're swimming in the kiddie pool, you're still swimming in love. I remember being 18 and knowing I was in love with a guy that we'd been like, we were like best friends, I guess. I think when you make it up in your head, like, I think we were best friends, but dated. And I was
he's
like,
all, what's your name?
Yeah, he's like, I'm sorry, who are you?
And you bring us some macaroons.
I know, he was the worship leader. I clearly have a thing for worship leaders, my bad. But like, he was the worship leader at our church and like really good friends. And then he went on Australian Idol, got famous really quickly. And like, there goes our relationship. And so I was so, honestly, I think it took me longer to get over that relationship than my divorce. Wow. Which is crazy because you look at the depths of it. But I think you also look at the rebound factor in the sense of rebounding from failure, rebounding from pain. And it's like a muscle. Like if you start to exercise it, it doesn't always hurt like it did. And so, but having said that, my deepest pain would 100% be the divorce. And y'all were all there for it. But I think when you, the deepest pain is when you think you found forever and then someone promises you forever, you start building forever and then forever crashes and burns. And I don't know if there's a pain like that, that physical ache that you, I thought I was having a heart attack. Like some moments I haven't really talked about it like in depth a lot, but out publicly, but physically I felt the pain. And I remember getting married, and I didn't know you guys when I got married, which is crazy to think, but got married and it was picture perfect. And I mean, it was picture perfect, but it skipped the process. And we went for the picture instead of what makes a moment to take a picture. And we wanted the most beautiful wedding. And even like, I don't look at the photos now, but like thinking back on some of the wedding photos, they were so like bus-like and like, you know, that show Empire and like just like Cookie Lion and like, which is not, you know, she doesn't have a great relationship on the show, which should have showed me. But I think we got married and I thought marriage would fix things. And so I think that's the first thing is marriage doesn't fix things. Mm-hmm. It illuminates things. Intimacy does not fix things. It reveals things, and it revealed things really quickly for us. And, it was heartbreaking. And I remember the day that a physical photo of our wedding day shattered. He had, you know, thrown it to the ground. I'm not going to lie. It fell off the wall randomly, you know, no, he threw it. And it shattered and it was significant because I remember thinking like, oh, this is the end. This is the beginning of the end of our perfectly framed life and hashtag couple goals and what everybody thought it was. And we separated once in the marriage. It wasn't long, it was 11 months or something, but we separated once and people didn't know. And I was still preaching and traveling and whatever. And then I stopped preaching and traveling and doing that because I just couldn't do a public thing while my private life was falling apart. And then we got married in January. In the December, it finally ended. And the cracks were showing before. I remember at Thanksgiving that year, I called Angela the night before Thanksgiving. And we hadn't told anyone that it was crappy. It was terrible, worse than crappy. but called Angela and I was like, hey, by the way, think we might get a divorce, but can't wait for it.
Hey, should I bring salad or rolls? Or like
mac and cheese?
Rolls. Okay, also, yeah. I'm probably getting divorced.
Yeah.
But I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, let's be grateful. Hashtag grateful. She was like, wait, I'm sorry, what? Literally, it was very similar to that because I think heartbreak does that. It's such a turmoil. It's such a pain. You become detached from yourself as a mode of survival. And it ended. My dad was in town the week it ended. I think I've shared that story before. But for me, my ex-husband, I would say I filed for divorce. And I really struggled with the filing aspect because to me it was like, I know what the Bible says. Like, I'm a pastor. This is the end of my ministry. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting divorced 10 months in. Like, who does that? But it was a, hey, let's label something that he had left a long time ago. And emotionally, a lot of other areas had left and didn't want it. And so that pain wasn't real for a little while. And it was the holidays, it was Christmas, it was all the things, New Year's, oh my God, New Year's Eve. But I remember the following weeks, I went back to Australia for 4 months to heal. And for me, it was, okay, how do I do this? Because I listened to podcasts, I read books, but it was like, how, okay, I'm here. However we get here to this point of heartbreak, what the hell do I do now? How do I get my life back? And for me, it was being really authentic with the pain, like you said, Angela, not trying to numb it, not trying to run from it, though I used those methods. You get to a point where it's like, I am broken. And if I don't do something about this, my brokenness will take a lot of different shapes and may have a lot of different filters, but it will still be brokenness and I will still end up with another broken person. And I don't want to do that. So that's kind of like where I got to. And I've seen him once at my yoga studio, which is,
you did?
Yeah, I saw him once.
Yeah,
it's like a Hollywood story.
It's funny.
No.
He, yeah. Okay, no one will listen to us. It's just us talking, right?
It's totally fine.
I was in the elevator and it was closing and I was in such a happy state. I'd been, Francia and I had been to your show the night before.
Oh yeah,
it was the week before I went to Bali with my family. I just moved back to LA. I was feeling great. I was wearing my, like, I love Jesus, but I'll punch a hoe sweater.
Yes.
You're welcome. Get it, Angela.com. Angela Johnson. Yes. It's fine. And the doors were closing and I hear someone running for the elevator and they're like, open it. Like, keep it open. And I was like, oh, I'll be a nice human. So I
press open. No.
Homeboy is standing right in front of me at the elevator.
Oh my God. What did you say? What did you do?
I grabbed my yoga mat. I said, namaste. No, I didn't. I was like, hi. And then I just froze. And
oh man,
and it was kind of like a conversation in monologue form on his side, and lots of different things were said on his side. I froze. Everyone remembers the first time they saw their ex after it, and for me, I knew I'd see him, and I knew I'd see him in a state that wasn't like where I was all done up. But actually, I feel like, I know it's so spiritual, but I feel like it was God, because I love yoga. People know I'm either at yoga or at church. Like, I'm at one of the two things. And so I had a new yoga outfit on. My skin was clear.
Yeah.
My skin was clear. I felt good. Francie was waiting for me. She'd saved us a spot. And no one else knew what had happened. Like, if he'd walked into church, for example, everyone would have known.
Mm-hmm.
But we walked into yoga and Francie, I had one friend, one girl that knew, and no one else had to know what was happening. And I owned it.
Did he go into the class with you?
Oh, yeah.
He took the same class as you?
Yeah, he took the same class.
Oh, no.
I mean, probably petty. It's probably petty to say he didn't last the whole class. That'd be petty for me to say.
Yeah. No!
You know what's funny?
He's like, it's too hot in here.
I can't. In so many ways.
You know what's interesting is each person telling their story. Like, I feel there is this thing my boy Dave told me when I was going through it. I felt so stupid because of the way I was acting. Like, I'm like, I feel this is dumb. 2 days and I'm crying for 6 months. And I remember my boy Dave rebuking me and telling me, hey man, don't ever make yourself feel stupid for crying or for reacting the way you do. Don't ever make yourself feel stupid for feeling genuinely about someone that may have played you out, that may have duped you, that may have tricked you. Because you're doing yourself a dis- a disservice. You're calling your genuine effort at love, your genuine shot at love, you're making it seem like it was stupid or embarrassing or silly that you would even feel that way about someone. He made me feel okay about getting played. He was like, bro, you loved her and you loved her good. And it was 2 days. Yeah, to anyone else that may sound stupid, but to you, like, you genuinely was in this.
Yeah.
So be proud of that, because a lot of people, they just walk through life not giving love an actual chance. So I think it's all of us in our own ways, we reacted to it differently.
Yeah.
But I'm glad at least I didn't hear anybody say that they treated themselves like, you know, you're dumb, get over it, just whatever. To me, if you go through something like that, cry as many tears as you need to.
Amen. Yeah.
Laugh if you need to, you know, let your friends make fun of you. You make fun of yourself, you know, like, just kind of love the idea of it. But more importantly, don't change the genuineness. Yeah. Don't change the depth of your love or your desire to love. Because then you just end up cheating yourself and whoever that person coming along next is.
There's something so beautiful, I think, about tears.
I was just
gonna say that. Huge crier. Like, if I'm happy, if I'm really sad, if I see something that's just beautiful, like if I hear a song for the first time and I'm just so captivated by it, I'll shed tears.
Yeah.
And I just remember one of my mentors, he told me, like, years ago, I was going through when I was kind of dealing with my parents' divorce. And just feeling like my whole, like, concept of family, my foundation of which I've, like, built my life on in a way is completely crushed. Mm. And I just remember crying and I'm just like, man, I'm trying to pray and all I can do is cry. And I remember he just, like, put his hand on my back and he smiled and he's like, man, those tears are more powerful prayers than you could ever say with your mouth.
There you go. Wow.
And he was like, and the beautiful thing about tears, Brandon, is always helps you see straight. Mm. And, like, so for me, it's like,
wow.
Tears in my eyes have always been, okay, what I'm feeling is very real. Wow. And there's something in that realness where you could actually see what things are for what they are. So for me, when I get to the point of crying, I realize, all right, let me just take this moment. Let me just have this. And I'm not ashamed. I'm like I feel very confident in my masculinity.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like real men have real feelings and they can cry. Mm-hmm. So go for it.
Manny cries all the time.
Yeah, that's why we're bros. Yeah.
He used to cry more. I remember when we first got married and he would do like his worship time or whatever, and he would be like bawling, snot crying, like pacing the house.
Now I can't do it because the house is so...
Well, now the house is so big, so he could just go off into, like...
I do it outside.
The left wing of the house.
The left wing.
But when we lived in our little condo in North Hollywood, there wasn't no place to go, so I would just see him, like, pacing the house, like, bawling, crying. And then I'd be like, what's wrong? He'd be like, nah, babe, just God just told me, or whatever, like he learned, like, in his prayer time.
Yeah. I think it's, like, it's so interesting to me, the whole tears thing, because it's so true what you just said. It's that realization that, like, what I'm feeling is real. I was freaking watching Marie Kondo the other day tidying up.
Yeah.
And it was the episode about her husband. This lady's husband had passed away and she had to get his clothes out. Mm. And I was wailing, like, in my apartment by myself. I live by myself because I'm worthy of Angela's love. If you don't know what that means, check out the podcast before on how to get love. But I was watching it and wailing, and the episode ended and I was like, what is wrong with me? And I honestly feel like it was God. And he talked to me, he's like, I'm just healing another layer. Because to me, when I realized it was deeper and it healed something in me that I had to pack up my apartment 2 times. He'd left twice. And so I had to pack up our apartment the first time and I never grieved properly. And so I think as we process pain, you have to go through levels of grief. There is no such thing as grieving for 12 hours unless you've known someone an hour. Like, to the degree you knew someone and to the degree you felt pain, you got to heal. And so for me and for you and for actually all of us, we have to learn to let our emotions come to the surface so we can actually feel them and then decide what to do with them. If we keep suppressing them, you don't get to skip the process.
Right.
You're going to go through it. And so you can either numb it or feel it, but either way, you're going to have to deal with it. And so
I think it's a beautiful thing. Like what you can find on the other side of it. Like we kind of mentioned on his parents getting divorced, which I'm sure you'll get to say more about that. But like, I've never been divorced. The closest thing I got to a divorce was when my group ended.
Yeah.
Which felt just like a divorce because we were together for like 12, 13 years. And the way it ended was so sad. You know, like people, we didn't tell the truth at all. Like the label just put out some crap. It was so
irreconcilable differences or something.
it was dumb. I mean, Pablo left for the worst reasons, and then you know, when B left, it was I mean, you could say amicable, but it wasn't that at all. It was bad.
Yeah.
And it was one of those situations where I was like so angry, because it's not that you're perfect in any relationship, both, you know, everybody has a part to play in it. But I can track back to the beginning of how hard I tried to at least get better, to change, to be a good leader, to be a good whatever. And then to try so hard to please someone and for you to come up short was very difficult, because most of the time I can at least work hard enough to accomplish whatever goal that I was trying to set. But when you're dealing with someone else, there's a realization that you cannot change another person. You can't make them love you. You can't will them to love you. You can't love them enough so that they'll love you back.
That's it.
The only thing that you can do is your best. And sometimes when your best isn't enough, things come crashing down and you find yourself like, wow, what just happened?
Yeah.
In our case, it got nasty, and there was at the initial time, I wanted to be angry and I wanted to just like strike back. I just wanted to fight back.
Yeah.
But I remember the lesson I learned with the chick that I went with for 2 days. And I was like, you know what? Forgiveness will always be the route I'm going to take. Not because I want to be super spiritual or whatever, but because I genuinely feel that why in the hell would I put myself through anger, bitterness, malice, when I know at the end of that, I'm going to have to tear down all of those walls that I built up. If I build up malice, anger, bitterness, knowing as a child of God, I'm going to have to go back and tear those things down. Why in the hell am I creating extra work for myself?
Right.
Especially when I know over there, those people that I'm trying to in some way subconsciously hope that they feel my bitterness or my anger, you know, they've moved on with their life.
Right.
They don't care. Expecting somebody to freaking react or feel your bitterness or your whatever is insanity. They have moved on with their life. They're doing them. There's no reason for me to stop my life with bitterness or with anger. So I told my wife, I remember I was like, babe, we ain't saying a single negative thing about these people in this house. Nothing. Even though, you know, homeboy or husband's out there online trying to end your career, putting crap on Facebook, putting crap on, I mean, literally, it's all documented. Label had to step in so many times and be like, yo, take this stuff down, man. This isn't good. Even through all that, I told my wife, I was like, we ain't gonna talk crap in this house. Even though nobody's around to hear this, we will not say a single word, because one of these days, I'm going to see this dude face to face, and I'm going to say what I told that chick too. Hey, man, I only prayed for you. That's it.
You know, I did other things.
That's a really good point, because I feel like sometimes there are certain points I felt like this that I had to almost, not pastor, but maybe help other people process my divorce. And there was the aspect of
he had to help me.
Yeah, me having to process it, and then having friends, my parents, my family, who were very much in the pain of it. Julian, like my pastor and like big brother, said to me, he said, at least you were on the operating table. It's like you were on the operating table and you were on life support, but other people had gotten shot in the process. So it's like you have to deal with other people's wounds, mm-hmm. even though you're on life support. And it's such a good point, because there's probably people listening who someone so close to them has had their heart absolutely broken and there's been absolute injustice, or someone has had their heart broken and they feel like they're walking other people through that. What was that like, Ange, for you being on the loyal end, being the wife of that, to watch him walk through that? Because he can forgive, but how did you do that? Okay, she's fixing the headphones.
I was so mad. I was hurt. I didn't understand his level of forgiveness and positivity and moving forward, because like we would both read the same nasty thing that was written about him.
Yeah.
And he would be like, nope, we're not going to say nothing. And then me over here, the comedian, I was like, nah, I got a few good ones.
Yeah. I can do a whole set. Know,
I got a special in me.
Let me at him right quick.
I could do a couple hashtags. We could get a whole campaign going. But no. And so he taught me a lot about forgiveness. And it wasn't even my battle. Like, it was his battle. But he's having to talk me off the ledge and remind me about character and all of that kind of stuff, and all the sayings that are good sayings, but they actually mean things. Like, I remember there was a couple good sayings in that season about like kings don't throw stones or whatever. Like, I forget.
I mentioned it in the podcast.
I had a couple good ones.
I'm a king. I see myself as a king. I'll never see myself as anything less. But kings don't throw stones at the peasants. The peasants throw stones at the kings because they want what the king has. So I don't entertain. And it's not a diss. It's not like, but at that point, you know, he was acting like a peasant. And I just, I don't entertain that stuff, because, yo, king people got king stuff to deal with. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I just know better. I know better, you know? I don't want to lend my life to hatred or to malice or to online fighting, you know? Like, I read that crap and I was like, man, this is so petty. And at the same time, I'm like, yo, I feel like this is a good dude. A good dude, not a bad person. But I think when people get in bad situations, the bad comes out.
Yeah. I remember another good one that was said during that season. I don't remember exactly how it went, but it was a good visual, and I'm a visual learner. And it was something about, like, if I spew poison at this person way over there, it's not going to reach them over there. It's just going to land in my own garden. It's going to land in my own yard. So the poison that comes out of my mouth, it's never going to reach them. It's just going to land right in my own yard.
I have to clean it up.
Putting poison in my own yard by saying that stuff.
Jeez. Yeah, I was teaching her about the reality of this dude thinking that he can end my career, thinking that by getting online that he's really reaching me. You know what I'm saying? But if we believe what we believe in the concept of reaping and sowing, he's only sowing into his own garden, because we can't sow into other people's gardens.
Yeah.
We can't. No matter what we say, things we do, we only sow into our own garden. So that's why the concept of reaping and sowing was so prominent. So that's why I kept telling him, I was like, babe, let him talk.
Yeah.
Because he's literally just planting seeds in his garden, the anger, the malice that he's gonna reap one day, and he's gonna have to deal with all these things. He's not gonna be able to reach me. He never will. And so that was just something that I really understood. And I remember one time, oh man, it was crazy.
What did I say?
Because we were going through a financial thing, and I was like,
don't get specific.
Yeah, no, I was like, I don't care about money. You can have all the money. It doesn't matter. My business manager wasn't too cool on that, but it was a fight came down to money. And I was like, who cares, man? I don't need this money. Keep it all. It doesn't matter. And then my business manager was like, nope, that's not happening. And then my wife said something like, you know, she just made a financial comment. And it was a braggadocious one on our part.
Braggadocious.
It was very much a braggadocious. It was true. But I looked at her, and she just said it to me. And I said, babe, I literally rebuked her. I was like, don't ever say something like that again. Because just because we have X amount of money and whatever, that don't make us anything. But that's the kind of stuff that God hears. And then takes the money away from people like that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because just because you got a lot of money don't mean anything. So like,
yeah.
And we repented right then and there. Gosh, I made her repent. I was like, don't ever talk like that again. Because this don't mean anything. Money don't mean nothing. That's what we're fighting about now. This is stupid. Mm. The only thing that matters at the end of the day is that when this is all said and done, I could lay my head down at night and be like, you know what? I held my tongue. Mm. I was angry. I was hurt. But I prayed for these people. I loved on them. And whether they ever believe it or whether they ever see it, it's all good. The Lord will defend me. And that's how it ended. And we've been growing ever since. You know what I'm saying?
But how did you do that?
It was less of a fatherly rebuke.
He's like, get behind me, Satan. Yeah,
just to throw that out there.
Did he actually call you Satan?
Tatiana!
Bust down, girl.
B, your parents, like... That's the same kind of thing. You watch that.
Yeah. And it's so crazy because a little bit what Andrew's just saying of like, even though the group didn't break up with her, it was like this feeling of like the anger and the like, oh man, I'm about to pop off on somebody. Mm-hmm. Like I felt that with my parents.
Sure.
And I think in some ways, I mean, early on, unfairly, I was much more angry with my mom. And again, our relationship has been completely restored. She's like my best friend. Love my mom.
That's so cool.
But before, I just remember being so angry at my parents. And it got to the point where that anger that I was holding inside of me, that I was like secretly kind of lashing at both of them. With my mom, I was a little bit more vocal up front and I said some hurtful things. And I just started realizing, oh my God, this anger is turning into bitterness in me. And this is killing me. This wasn't even my relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, this wasn't my burden to bear. Now, again, granted, I'm in the family. I'm grafted in that tree. So it's going to affect me and my relationships. But it doesn't have to infect inside of here. And that's when that pathway to, like, trying to get whole with that again really started. And it was just, it was really tough seeing how both of them and myself, and my sister included, like, our whole family, it was like, trying to move forward and we're all carrying this huge rock behind us. And it was like, it messed up all of our lives. Again, we're all doing good now. We're all shining, but it was like, it was so tough. Everyone was just looking at each other, like kind of suspiciously, you know, because there was like, without saying it, like in a divorce, people are going to be like, well, I don't want you to choose sides. Well,
yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
I did.
And at the end of the day, like you secretly are choosing a side.
Yes.
And whether you're voicing that to the person you're the side on or not, you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because like early on, I didn't know anything. And again, so that broke me. And I think in that brokenness also came understanding where I could start seeing things differently as they really are. And so I just remember, man, it was just like, holidays sucked.
Wow.
Man, it was just like we couldn't get our rhythm. It didn't feel like a family. Like everything felt so empty. And I remember my senior year of college, I moved home so I could spend more time with my dad and help him in the process. And I just remember every day walking down the hall, like this house that I grew up in, it felt like hell. Like it felt like the worst place to be. Because I'm like seeing this blanket and my mom bought that blanket. Oh man, I remember like crying with my mom on that couch, you know, or being in their room and laying on their bed and just spilling my heart out for my mom. And yeah, it was like, I really thought that I wasn't going to bounce back from it. And it wasn't even my marriage.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking all these fears of like, man, am I doomed to like follow in the same path? Like, am I going to be married to the love of my life for 21 years? And then all of a sudden it's just going to break up. And like, it just doesn't work. Am I going to have kids that I'm going to disappoint because I'm not the man that they thought I was going to be, you know? And it felt like it leveled me out. And I really felt like, wow, I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. For the first time in my life, I wasn't hopeful.
Wow.
It's like all these things are so scaring me. And so I'm thinking like, how do I bounce back from something I don't have any hope for bouncing back from?
Yeah.
And that was like where family and friends really started surrounding me.
Yeah.
And man, it was like, they reminded me of like, you're this guy. You're amazing. You got so much to offer. You got potential, man. You're compassionate. You're empathetic. You're kind. And it was just like, I needed to hear all these things because I couldn't see that in myself at that time. And, you know, like one of those guys for me was William, who actually introduced, like, William is the reason that I know you guys, which is so crazy.
Yeah, the silver lining. I met you at my surprise party.
Yes, that was amazing. And William, I'll never forget it. During that awkward holidays, William, he calls me. He knows what my family's going through. He knows what I'm going through. He says, hey, can I come over for Thanksgiving? And so I asked my dad. I'm like, hey, can Will come? He's like, absolutely, man. So Will drove up and he spends Thanksgiving with us. And I remember he's staying in the guest room. I'm standing in the doorway of the guest room. And he's laying on the bed. He looks at me and says, Brandon, you're going to make it, man. And I just remember it like hit me like a ton of bricks. Like I was like, I'm not going to cry right now. I'm going to go to my room and cry. But it was like, it was everything that I needed to hear. Yeah. Like I just needed somebody to tell me, you're going to make it, man.
Wow.
And that was one of the holes that I couldn't climb out of myself. Man, I just needed really good people around me who could encourage me and tell me, you're going to make it.
Wow.
I think everyone has a story like that. Like that's, thank you for sharing that, for real, because people need to hear that. People need to hear the raw, we've all had a moment in that we didn't think we were going to make it. And it's like, you talk about the people surrounding you, and it was in all, I guess we can talk about is our own stories. But like for me, those moments, I know I get it when you say for the first time you didn't have hope. Cause to me, I did everything right. I didn't do things right with every relationship. Like definitely not this relationship. I thought I had done everything right. What do you do when you think you've done everything the right way, or Christians, the Bible way? We did it right, you know? Mm-hmm. And for me, it was those conversations with people in the midst of not understanding. I remember my dad taking me to the Australian Open, a tennis tournament in Australia, a couple of weeks after, and it had been fun. And I was still a little distant, you know, you're a little detached in the moments of heartbreak, but I was trying to be there. It was on my bucket list forever to go to the Australian Open. It's me and my dad, and we're really tight. And we're getting it. We've saved seats all day for this, like this game show, this game that night. And I'm forgetting the guy's name, but it was like a full on big tennis name. We saved seats all day, like 6 hours. We've been saving these seats. So we go to get something to eat before the show, before the game.
I'm so mad.
And you know what's gonna happen.
I'm so mad already.
And so there's all these food trucks, and I see the food, fish tacos. There you go. Brandon putting his wine glass down, but actually perfectly timed, because Maddie, Brandon's wife, had given me the recipe for these fish tacos when I was married, and it was the like one thing I felt like I could get right in my marriage, to be honest, in a lot of ways. And we had so many good times, like actually just eating and forgetting about our problems. And this night, it wasn't even a big deal. And then suddenly I zoom in on that one memory, like you're talking about walking down the hall and seeing the blanket and the thing. And I get the fish tacos. It's freaking fish tacos on a plate. I freak out. I'm like, we got to go. I can't be here. We need to leave right now. I start bawling my eyes out in the middle of 20,000 people walking around me at a freaking tennis tournament. I'm so mad. Why the hell couldn't you like my fish tacos? Like because you start to,
yeah,
to create these questions and these things. And I was like, why didn't you like what I did? I tried everything for you. I didn't even like fish, like all this stuff. And it is so dumb in the moment. And you feel so silly. Like what you're talking about, Manny, like you feel so silly. Cause it's like, it's just, why is this triggering something deeper inside of me? And yet you have these moments that you think everything's going to be fixed, and you think it's a dream or a nightmare, or you're going to wake up and then you have this reality of, no, I'm in Australia with my dad, and I have filed for divorce, or my parents have divorced, or what I thought would be my forever career has broken up, or the one that I thought would be there and that would forgive and we'd get through this. And I thought I knew one way, and now life has created this plan B that I never created with it, without my permission. What do I do? And I remember being, my dad being so kind, and we left. And I felt, I'm a freaking 3-2 on the Enneagram. So my like people pleasing skills were causing me so much grief that day, because my dad, I knew he was excited to see this game. But he got our stuff. I know. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
St. Michael.
Thanks, Angela. No, but we left and we went back to the hotel, which was a mile away from the arena. And we sat in our room and we watched it on TV, the game. And I remember him ordering me fries and a glass of wine and being like, it's okay. We'll have another Australian Open. But it's in those moments of triggering that you have the people around you that remind you, like, we're going to make it. There's going to be more times. We're going to be okay, you know?
So. Yeah, man. I think, man, if you're listening to this and you're the person that walked away or got walked away from or had this life handed to you, this decision that maybe was out of your hands, there's very little you can do to affect the other person or to change the other person. Or you can wish, you can hope, you can do all these things. You can recant, you can try to recall things that you could have did better or worse or whatever, man. The only person that you can control is yourself. And if you can find it in yourself to hope again, to just have the courage to believe that the best is yet to come, like everything else, man, time does heal all things. It's just important for you to realize that the only person that you can change is yourself. So take the scars, love them, but at the same time, man, like, look inside yourself and try to make yourself better. Because I know, at least for me, man, like, God, every single time I went through something, whether it was the breakup or whether it was a group one thing, and I thought that it was all about the other person and I wanted to blame them, man, God so quickly put the magnifying glass on me.
Yeah.
And all I could see was the thing that I did wrong and the things that I did bad and how I could have loved better, how I could have treated better, how I could have did better. And I love that. I accept that. I don't like passing the responsibility, because like you said, you're just going to end up making the same mistake again. You're going to find repeating the same mistakes with a different person because you didn't do the work in yourself. So I know it's easy to be like, but they did this, but they did this. But at the end of the day, man, it's just you and yourself staring in that mirror. The other person is gone. And all you can do is accept the things that you can change, you know, and throw away the rest. Mm. So if you're out there dealing with it, man, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
If you have some friends around that want to, you know, don't hide yourself away. Don't be in solitude. Have some friends around and maybe they'll have a good word to say that'll be exactly what you needed to hear. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But we love you guys. We hope that somehow, some way, something that we said, a story that we told, you found yourself in it. And even more important, that you'll find yourself coming out of it. Mm. Yeah?
Yeah. Amen.
I love you guys.
Namaste.
I'm glad everybody at this table is doing well and walking towards wholeness.
That's what friends do, man. They walk you out
of it. That's what friends
are. I remember Angela taking me to Buck Williams a couple weeks after and telling me, you'll get through it. She had the moment like William did with me. I just remembered.
Shane never took me to Burke Williams.
I mean, that's because that's our spot now. Sucker.
Dude, I got a Bible story. Can I share a Bible story?
Okay, spiritual.
Yeah. All right, this is going to be really quick. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is this man named Jacob. Jacob, he finds himself at this place and he's wanting more out of his life, if I could frame it that way. And he's wanting more from his relationship with God. And so he finds himself at the spot. Somehow events happen. He finds himself actually wrestling with this angel, right? Mm-hmm. And in this wrestling, the angel is like, yo, Jacob, let me go. And Jacob's like, no, I'm not going to let go until you bless me. So he's hanging on. Finally, I think the angel just kind of gets annoyed and like pokes him. But again, it's like superpower poke and like dislocates the man's hip. So the hip is like now popped out. And Jacob is still hanging on for dear life because he's like, I want the blessing. Like, I want something more. I am not giving up. And to me, even that is just encouraging.
Yeah.
Like, yo, he's in pain. He's got a broken hip. He still hasn't let go yet. And guess what happens? He ends up getting the blessing.
Yeah.
But I think for the rest of his life, there was probably, he walked different, you know, if I could say that. Like, there was probably, he had a little bit of a limp to his step that he didn't used to have. And what's amazing is I think every day when he felt that, sometimes those scars that we have in our life kind of feel like it opens up in moments. It's like, man, now being on the other end of receiving the blessing, I can now look at that limp that I walk with and it reminds me of the time where I didn't let go.
Yeah.
And I didn't give up. And I just hung on. And what happened on the other end?
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, when I look at myself, like, in my, this is going to sound really, really weird, and like my spirit person, like, I have a lot of gray hairs and I got a limp. And it just reminds me of all the times that I didn't give up.
Come on.
That has made me who I am today and the person that can be here today.
Yeah.
And so if that's you and you're going through it and you feel more broken than ever, just hang on. You got this. Yeah. You can do it. And I promise you that there's a blessing on the other side. There's more on the other side if you could just hang on.
Yeah.
Lean into the limp.
Lean into the limp.
Walk with your limp.
Watch with your limp.
Walk it out now. Walk it out now. Walk it out. What's that? Walk it out.
Hey, man. We love you guys. We pray that you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome in ours.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I get to pee every time.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.